Welcome to the Sigmund Cinema Podcast, where all things movie related are broken down, discussed, put back together, and discussed some more. Here's your host, Sigmund.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the podcast. And today, I'm bringing in a good friend of mine to discuss, I guess I could call it a divisive trilogy of movies, the prequel Star Wars movies. So before we get started going into that tangled web, I'm going to have my guest introduce himself and go ahead whenever you're ready.
All right. I am John Herrera. And I am a rare Star Wars fan because I like the prequels.
Sweet, sweet. And let's see. Oh, you say you're rare. And what would you, as far as the... No, go ahead.
It seems to be rare because a lot of people, either don't like it or criticize it a lot.
Oh, yeah. And so that's fair enough. No, that's fair enough. So we'll get into all of that. We'll bring up the original trilogy, and we might not need to discuss the sequel trilogy. But bring us in. And speaking of which, for those of you that are listening, you can listen to the last episode where the sequel trilogy is discussed and broken down with myself and another guest. But enough about that. Let's get to the prequel trilogies and what brings us here. So we're gonna start with a little bit of a lead-in, and the first movie, we're gonna break them down movie by movie a little bit. Star Wars The Phantom Menace. Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace, the first of the prequel movies, written and directed by George Walton Lucas. And up to this point, from the last movie he directed was the original Star Wars, or Episode IV, A New Hope. And after that, Lucas would not have directed a movie for 20 years. And I'm going by filming dates, not release dates. So 1977 was the last shot he shot for Star Wars, and 1997 was when they started filming on The Phantom Menace. So John, I'll quit babbling here and have you break down The Phantom Menace. What's your initial reaction when you first saw it back in 99, and that compared, if any, changes with your most recent viewing?
Well, you kind of have to go back a little bit, back to 97.
All right.
With the special editions.
All right, that's the re-released originals.
Yes, the re-released originals was the first time I got to see any Star Wars in a theater. But it also gave you kind of a taste of what was to come with all the new graphics.
Oh yeah.
But you know, that kind of for me re-got the hype going, like the anticipation. Because sometime after those came out, it was announced that they were going to make a new Star Wars. Mm-hmm. So it was like, being able to anticipate a Star Wars movie was pretty cool. And so just those 2 years of knowing that it was going to come out, I think added a little bit to the excitement for me for Episode One, you know, because it was you know, it's like a build-up. You're like, oh man, I can't wait. So but regardless, even if it didn't do that, I'm pretty sure that the anticipation, the excitement of Episode One still would have been there, because that one was a pretty good movie. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to see new lands, new ships, new characters, and some old ones in their younger form.
Of course.
You know, so it I enjoyed that one probably the most.
Oh, the Phantom Menace?
Yes.
Ah, it's interesting. So,
See, I told you I'm rare.
And we're going to definitely get into the criticisms, which there are plenty of. And you know what? Let's start out with, I guess, what's universally considered to be... Yeah, man. Well, yeah, you know what? I think this is one of the biggest one of the movie. Jar Jar Binks, what's your overall opinion on him?
I never minded Jar Jar. Like, he wasn't like a favorite character. But I don't have much criticism, because I don't think a lot of people did either until the second movie.
This is true, yeah.
You know, and we could get into that on the second movie, but sure. Because I really don't remember anybody talking bad about Jar Jar. Now, this is, you know, right around internet infancy. Well, not infancy, but maybe adolescence. Not everybody had the internet. You really had to dig down for fan websites and info and everything. And the media really didn't get their news off the internet either. So there wasn't access to all the criticism per se for everybody. So I'd never heard of it until years later.
And you know? So, yeah, that's true. That's a good observation. I'm glad you brought that up. And like I said, we'll get to that to the next movie, but although he wasn't everybody's favorite, that hate wasn't there for him yet. And right. It's interesting why that hate did come about, but we'll get to that. But and it's interesting. Oh, go ahead.
As far as his character, okay, I think he was added, and I think he was the comic relief, because you didn't have C-3PO and R2-D2 to be there for that comic relief. So George probably thought he needed a character to make up for that hole that he was going to have in his story, because it's before you got to be introduced to these characters,
right?
You know, they're just coming out, getting to be where they're going to be. So I think he was for comic relief, but you could probably say that it was a little bit too comical.
Yeah,
at some points.
True enough. And another thing about Jar Jar, it's gonna be, I know people are gonna get on me, but if I'm defining this right, Jar Jar Binks is the first I think 100% fully realized CG character, as in walking, talking. Because, you know, some people would say, oh, the dinosaurs in Jurassic Park. But as far as a character that interacts or walk and talk and is integral to the story. So
like what an actor would be.
Exactly.
Not necessarily an animal or a prop or anything, but like he's an actual person interacting with the other actors. Probably.
Yeah, that's probably. Supposedly. That's what a lot of people say. But I'll definitely be corrected if I'm wrong on that. But even then, there hasn't been a CG character, 100% CG character that interacted in the way that Jar Jar does. And so basically, my initial thoughts on The Phantom Menace is, I liked it a lot initially when it came out, and rewatched it about a week ago, and I do like the movie. And you notice a little things, you notice here and there, and I wanted to bring something up to also ask you about. And we're gonna ask this question with each subsequent movie, maybe. But so George Lucas, he wrote and directed this movie, and the visual effects, for the most part, while they're not bad per se, as far as time passage, you know, it's been 21 years. It seems like George Lucas was overly reliant on green screen as far as environment. You know, when they're on Tatooine, obviously that's real. You know, they're in a real location, but that's the criticism, not mine necessarily. But you do notice as like you yourself, you told me off mic that you watched it in 4K, and some like composite shots might have stand out more than no. But what's you see what I'm saying?
I wouldn't think they stood out any more than HD, just a regular 1080 viewing of it, because in my opinion these days, any older movie like that bumped up to the new technology shows more of the flaws in it than it did when it was at a smaller scale. Mm-hmm. So it's not just this movie, but other movies, you can see a lot of the flaws. And I think also we expect better from our movies today of not being able to see it, whereas back then it was new and you can kind of accept it and go, oh well, you know, I know that was green screened and the color and that character doesn't match the other one, but it didn't matter because it was new.
Yeah,
you know. And on this one, I don't think he used a lot of green screen, but I don't think he used as much as he would in the next two.
There we go. Yeah, we're definitely gonna get to that, because like I mentioned, the whole Tatooine section of the movie is obviously they're in a real desert, and
yeah.
So, and I want to get to something that I mentioned, the sequel trilogy, and what I'm gonna bring up next has a lot to do with that. And I wouldn't say that it ticks me off, but I think it's more so. All right, so this is gonna be a twofer, and we're gonna segue one into the other. So I wanted to talk about the Phantom Menace's score, the score by John Williams, the great John Williams. So I'm gonna put you on the spot here. So the big fight scene at the end between Obi-Wan Kenobi, Qui-Gon Jinn, and Darth Maul, there's music playing. What is the name of that orchestral piece?
Duel of Fates.
Thank you. and I'm proving a point here, but thank you. So, in any of the sequel trilogies, The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi, or Rise of Skywalker, name me one piece of music from any three of those movies.
If I had to guess, it would be Ray something. That, yeah, I know what you're talking about. I thought about the same thing too about those movies.
And one more thing before you start talking. Okay. So the hard point I'm making is Duel of the Fates. That's, in my opinion, one of the best pieces of Star Wars music by John Williams. This movie was not nominated for score. All three of the sequel trilogy movies were nominated for best score. Name me a memorable piece of music from either one of those sequel trilogies.
You can't.
By name, gave me Duel of the Fates.
Right. Instantly.
Yeah. And you're not the only person to do that, that can do that. It's just a memorable... It's probably up there, second or third, to the Star Wars theme.
Oh, yeah. It's the most recognizable.
Yeah.
You know, besides the originals.
It's probably Imperial third. March, yeah, there you go. The Imperial, you know, March.
And the Star Wars theme, and even some of the I can't remember what it's called, but it's kind of like the pomp and circumstance of certain scenes, you know, that kind of music from the originals. You kind of, and I don't know if it's just because we've watched it so much, but I mean, to tell you the truth, once I heard the Duel of Fates, and I heard it. I'm pretty sure, I don't remember if I heard it before the movie came out or when the movie came out, but I remember listening to it, not in movie form, like on the internet or TV or whatever it was promoting it, and just loving it at the beginning.
Yeah,
it was memorable from the start, you know. Yep.
It's just a captivating piece of music.
Right.
And still to this day. And I mentioned we were going to segue into that. So Duel of the Fates score was played because of the Duel of the Fates were dueling. So as corny as that sounds, so I'm go straight into this, and I'm gonna ask this again when we get to the third movie, because I don't think any of the lightsaber fights from Attack of the Clones were that memorable. But anyway, is the Duel of the Fates lightsaber fight scene, the two-on-one fight scene between Obi-Wan, Qui-Gon, and Darth Maul, is this the best lightsaber fight scene in the prequel trilogy?
Yes, in my opinion, yes.
Alrighty.
In my opinion. Hey.
And you know why. Oh, go ahead.
It was the first time you got to see Jedis not stand there stiff.
Yeah.
And fight each other.
Because they're at their prime. And right. I'm glad that works its way into the story.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And then even with that, so Darth Maul instantly became like everybody's favorite bad guy, probably second to Darth Vader. The look of him, and this is the first time we saw, correct me if I'm wrong, well, for the average fan, the dual lightsaber. I'm pretty sure it was probably in a novelization somewhere or in some artwork, but as far as your average fan, this is the first time you'd have seen a dual lightsaber.
Yeah, definitely.
And, the trilogy, or the trailer, I'm sorry, when they had that little clip of him activating the dual lightsaber, I remember seeing that and people going nuts.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that whole trailer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I remember seeing the trailer and watching it over and over.
Yeah, and like you said, no, sorry to cut you off, but the internet was in its, not infancy, like you said, but it's adolescence, and I forget which movie it was. People were buying a ticket for this particular movie just to see the trailer for The Phantom Menace.
And oh.
I don't know why I didn't look that up.
Yeah, because I think... But it was a popular movie because I remember going to it.
Yeah. And we'll probably circle back to that one.
But that goes back to, you know, what I was saying about the hype and everything. Like, it was really everybody... Every Star Wars fan was ready when it was getting close to come out. They wanted it. The anticipation was there. They did anything, because there was a lot of promotion for that one.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
And I mean, not like you see today, because you don't, like you said, you didn't have the internet. So I think that's why I remember the Duel of Fates. Because I think I saw it like on MTV or VH1 or some Entertainment Tonight or something. You know, it was before. It was a preview before the movie came out. And I think that's why I remember seeing it before the movie. Because, you know, they were pumping out everything.
Mm-hmm. And it's, yeah, you're right. The marketing for this was nuts. I'm going to bring something up that I regret. I guess my collector's mentality that I have now wasn't in place. So they were marketing everything. So back in the day, this would have been 99, I was real heavy soda drinker. And Pepsi had Pepsi products, Mountain Dew, Pepsi, Diet Pepsi. They had the special edition cans that you could collect.
Yep.
And they had the one, like Yoda one, that was gold. And that was the one, the rare one, which of course I didn't get. But yeah, that's one of the marketing employees that I remember. And it's funny that we mentioned that. Like you said, back then, Star Wars was something sacred. We only had the original trilogy, and we had... it was something special to collect toys. And even the products and all that. But and I bring it up, for example, the sequel trilogy, it's just not there, you know? But like you said, the marketing was unbelievable, and even though we had to dig to the depths of the internet, it wasn't as how it is now.
Right.
That was very...
You know, as far as the marketing of the products, I think it's so commonplace today, you tend not to care, because I know I'm drinking out of Star Wars promotion Pepsi or Dr. Pepper cans and not caring. You know, you look at it and go, oh, okay, and not caring. But they didn't really, that didn't really happen back then either.
Yeah, that's
it kind of started it, you know. There was other things that they put on cans and movies and stuff, but it wasn't, I guarantee you, like, every day you go to the, like, every week you go to the supermarket and find some new can.
Yeah.
With a promotion on it. It wasn't
normalized back then.
Right. I think Doritos also had Star Wars stuff.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Bags and everything. You know? So, in the internet, I had a form of the internet, you know, back then. It was, I think it was just, the internet was just becoming commonplace for people to get broadband.
Right.
Which was still, still pretty slow back then.
Yeah.
You know, but websites were popping up more, you know, as the broadband came up. And there were some fan sites, but unless you were like a true fan and had good access to the internet, you really didn't.
Yeah, you didn't know where to go. Yeah.
Yeah.
And and those movies, so Star Wars, the Phantom Menace played, the teaser trailer played in front of three movies. Those movies were The Waterboy, Meet Joe Black, and The Siege. This was the teaser trailer.
Okay, the teaser trailer. Okay, yeah. Not the real trailer. Okay.
Yeah, not the whole trailer preview.
Okay.
And people were buying tickets to either one of these three movies to see the teaser.
Well, I bet you those movies did good.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure it got bumped up a bit. And Meet Joe Black was a legit 3-hour movie, so I'm sure that got a little bump in the box office.
Well, it's interesting that they chose to play it in front of that one.
Mm-hmm.
Because now, I mean, trailers are more focused these days. If you're going to see an action movie, you're going to see a ton of action.
Yeah.
Trailers. If you go see a kids movie, you're going to see a bunch of kiddie type, you know, and teenager type movies. You know, it's very focused.
And that's true enough.
That's kind of interesting.
So, you said you obviously like The Phantom Menace, and I'm going to go over a couple of other criticisms before we leave The Phantom Menace for the moment. So, I mentioned Jar Jar. Another criticism would be the young actor who was playing Anakin Skywalker. That would be Jake Lloyd. So, I'm going to bring up this interesting factoid. The role for Anakin was between Jake Lloyd, who would ultimately get it, some kid named Haley Joel Osment, who would go on to get another movie in The Sixth Sense, and the third person, I forget, this other actor would basically leave Hollywood after he didn't get this part. So on the special feature supplemental material of the DVD for The Phantom Menace, George Lucas, he consults with some of his workers. I don't know if they're producing partners or whatever. And he wants their opinion on the actors. And before they give their opinion, Lucas says, you know, I like this guy, pointing to Jake Lloyd. And the group of people, they said, yeah, well, yeah, I think we should go with him, blah, blah, blah. And this footage is on the supplemental material. When Lucas leaves the room, these people, they start saying, well, you know, I think this other kid had a more solid audition. Like, yeah, you know, I think you're right. And this is going to lead to a thing through the rest of the movies, that George Lucas for the prequel trilogy was basically, for lack of a better term, working with a bunch of yes men, and we're going to get into more detail with that. And they even have a nickname for this. They call it the Lucas effect, is that basically he didn't have anyone to I guess monitor his ideas, to tell him when something was bad or something was too much. And one more thing before I let you your opinion on that, Gary Kurtz, who was a producing partner with Lucas, he produced American Graffiti, the original Star Wars, and Empire Strikes Back. They had a falling out with Return of the Jedi because Gary Kurtz wanted to actually kill off I forget his name, Han Solo, and Harrison Ford wanted to experiment with that idea too, and Gary Kurtz agreed with him. But anyway, their relationship fell apart after that, Gary Kurtz and Lucas. And years later, after the prequel trilogy, Gary Kurtz said he thinks one of the problems with that prequel trilogy is Lucas didn't have any people to challenge him with any of the ideas. But anyway, what's your opinion on that?
It's probably true, you know, but Lucas, from what I've seen on all the other type of behind the scenes of these, especially the original and all the interviews people have said about him, he's kind of been that way for a while. He's an odd character. Mm-hmm. You know, he has a vision and that's how he wants to see it, and his directing style was different than, I mean, look at him in the Directors Guild. You know, he didn't care what the rules were. You know, he was gonna make the, and talking about the credits in the movie, if people don't know, you know, he didn't want to put the credits at the beginning of the movie, and they said, you're not gonna get, you know, we're not gonna give you your certification, whatever the hell it's called.
Yeah, his DGA recognition.
And he didn't care, because he was making what he wanted to make, how he wanted to make it. It was his vision. So you got to kind of, you know, it's his vision. You can't bump the boat too much on that. Mm-hmm. But I do know what you're talking about, because I've seen a lot of the prequel extra features, you know. And I think the guy's name, the producer on this one was Rick. I think Rick McCall. I don't know how you say
it. Yeah, Rick name. Rick McCollum.
McCollum
is his name. Okay. Yeah.
So he was like, he always seemed to be, yeah, let's do this. Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, you know, just going with the flow. I think he was just excited to be there.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, and he could have been the one that to challenge him, but I don't think he, because he also produced the special editions.
Yeah.
And when they redid that, and then he did these, the prequels. So, you know, yeah. And then I think a lot of people were just excited to go along with on the ride of making a new Star Wars that they didn't want to, or they were afraid to, because it's, like you said, it's George Lucas, you know. Yeah.
And he definitely had a godlike aura, a mystique about him, you know.
Right. And what's funny is he only made Star Wars and he wrote Indiana Jones, and that's pretty much it.
Definitely.
You know, it's like he's not Spielberg, who has a ton of great movies, but he just did a few and they just happen to be super popular.
That's true. And,
you know, so I'm pretty sure that happens with a lot of directors too.
Oh yeah, I wouldn't,
you know.
Yeah, that's easy. Yeah, we can bring up a few. And you know what? I think we're gonna later. But wrapping up the Phantom Menace, I think we both liked it, and we'll probably circle back if we've forgotten something about it. But for the moment, we're gonna take a quick break. We'll definitely be back in a couple of seconds for you listeners, and we're gonna move along to probably the most divisive movie in the prequel trilogy, Attack of the Clones. But we'll take a quick pause, and you'll listen to a sponsor, which I should have, hopefully have. But anyway, we'll be right back with you. Hey everybody, we are back with the Star Wars prequel trilogy talk, and John, you had mentioned something about the credits and why the Directors Guild of America rejected George Lucas, his membership. So there were certain rules in place back in the day which don't exist now. You know, every movie now comes on with basically not even the title of the movie, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, that kind of art form's gone out the window.
Yeah, and it's, but something else that I'm glad you brought that up, that George Lucas basically made popular, because he didn't want to put any hard credits at the beginning of the movie. George Lucas basically popularized the traditional end credits sequence with listing everybody who worked on a movie. Were you aware of this?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so basically, yeah, Star Wars, I believe they didn't exist to the day when named a couple of people, you know, like back in the day in the 50s and 60s, the credits would be like 15 seconds. They named the director, producer, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, Star Wars basically popularized the, to this day, the traditional format of the end credits, which now, because which is funny,
now take forever.
Right.
It's because they got so many, and that could be another thing too. I mean, back 60s and 70s, I mean, you didn't have a lot of special effects. You had visual effects, it was a visual effects were small houses,
definitely,
you know, especially, you know, just a handful of people doing that kind of stuff, and that's it.
Yeah.
So I could see that even just normal credits would go really fast.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of visual effects, before we get on a next movie, George Lucas would create the first major visual effects house in Industrial Lights and Magic. And that was the first major effects company that would be in existence. Before that, you just had individuals that specialized. They were freelancers. They didn't work at any one company.
Right.
And so with that, we are going to get into 2002's Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones. And here we go with what is, like I said earlier, one of the more divisive, or probably the most divisive movie within the prequel trilogy. And also with this, oh, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, oh yeah, agreeing with you.
So, one thing that George Lucas was probably laughed at about back then, which is, once again, George Lucas sets standards. Star Wars, The Attack of the Clones, Episode 2, was the first movie totally shot in a digital format. And it's weird to look back and think this was new. So back then, movie theaters, I remember this was a big deal. There were only so many movie theaters that could project the movie digitally. I believe when the movie was released, there was only 25 to 30 theaters in the whole United States, in North America, rather.
Right.
And now it's hard to find a movie theater that projects film. It's funny how that works.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if they have to go find them in the storeroom, probably.
Yeah, and that's crazy how that worked. So for most people, they didn't get to experience the movie how it was supposed to be seen, because there wasn't a lot of theaters that projected digitally, and a lot of movie critics criticized the movie and Lucas for this. But you know, you got to give Lucas credit for being an innovator. He took a chance, and now this is the norm. And
oh yeah.
So before we get into the movie, is one more thing. George Lucas actually called a meeting for directors in the film industry, supposedly. So Steven Spielberg, Coppola, Robert Rodriguez, Quentin Tarantino, he invited movie directors there to support him in this change in technology. And at the moment, only a couple of directors agreed with him. Robert Rodriguez jumped right into it. He made Sin City. He shot that digitally. He liked the freedom that you could have with the digital film format. But anyway, so Attack of the Clones, and I want to lead into this way. We talked about George Lucas casting Anakin Skywalker in The Phantom Menace when he was a child. So in this movie, the casting process, it was between Hayden Christensen, the late Jonathan Brandis, and Ryan Phillippe. And these
probably wouldn't have mattered any way.
So one of the big criticisms with this movie was Hayden Christensen's, well, it's bigger than that. So
yeah, it's bigger than that.
So one part of the criticism was Hayden Christensen's performance in the movie as Anakin Skywalker. And along with that was the relationship between he and the Princess Amidala, played by Natalie Portman. And the specific criticism was that they had no chemistry.
No.
And that also George Lucas is not the best writer of dialogue. And a lot of the dialogue in the scenes when they're together is kind of painful.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And I don't think it's just his writing, it's his directing.
Yeah.
I don't think he can see the action scenes. Well, not so much action scenes, because there's not that much in the original, and then in the prequel you get a little bit more, but not necessarily that, but just, I guess you could say, like, human feelings.
Yeah.
He has, because it even was present in the first one.
True.
In A New Hope. They weren't, besides Alec Guinness and Harrison Ford and Peter Cushing, everybody else's performance was slightly bland.
Yeah, it's kind of...
You know, especially, you know, Mark Hamill's, and he's gotten made fun of that too. You know, he was kind of a whiny little character.
That's true. What was the line at the beginning? It's like, oh, I wanted to go get the power converters.
Kashi Station to pick up some power converters.
Yeah, that's true. You can't deny that.
It was very whiny, not believable, you know, but that's Lucas. That's why the other Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi did much better, because they had different directors that knew how to actually direct human emotion.
People, right.
Right, people. And Lucas, it's not his strong suit. He's a good creator and he's a good innovator, but I've never called him a great director.
And there's a quote from Harrison Ford that comes from the making of the first movie. He had a trouble with a line that George Lucas wrote. He said, George, you could write this shit down, but you can't say it.
Oh yeah.
And which is hilarious, because that screenplay would get nominated for an Oscar. But so true.
You know, that's true, his enough mentality. So it kind of leaked over into episode 2, because he's wanting to show all this human emotion between Hayden and Natalie, which is very interesting, because Natalie Portman's not a bad actress.
Not at all. The Academy Award winning actress.
Exactly. But she was very bland. Mm-hmm. And you could tell that it's not her, it's the direction.
Yeah.
Of how she should be going about the scene. And it's kind of interesting looking back, especially rewatching it and going, golly, it's almost a little worse than it was in the beginning. Because you know, now you know the problems with it. And you're like, it just kind of amplifies it.
And to,
it's
like,
God, it's so dry.
It is. And to prove, and to stack on top of your point of George Lucas' direction of people versus effects, Attack of the Clones, in my opinion, and a lot of people agree, have talked to Attack of the Clones has one of the best speeder chases in any Star Wars movie, when they're chasing the assassin.
Of course, yes, I would agree.
That's
really good scene.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's shot well, and the effects. We were speaking of that, and like, you would have watched this in a 4K, and because the movie was shot digitally, and I think that actually lends itself to a modern high definition. It looks great.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, but no, that's funny how that works. But yeah, and even so, yeah, let's speak on that a little bit with George Lucas's direction and dialogue. We have actors like Samuel L. Jackson in the movie. You know, and it's just the performances are uninspired. You know,
yes. Yeah, I wouldn't say they were there for the money, because that's not why.
Yeah, no.
You know, Samuel Jackson didn't do it for the money. We all know he never does it for the money. But, you know, a lot of the characters, I'm like, even the way Palpatine acted, Ian McKellen, it wasn't the same. Like, I know it's not supposed to be the same, but even when he was, especially towards the he's kind of goofy.
Yeah,
I guess, you know, as the movie went on, and it was just kind of weird, and it shows up more in part three. I never really noticed it until I rewatched it here recent.
Yeah,
it's not the Palpatine Emperor character you kind of know. When he's got his shroud on, yes, you can't. There's just one direction of that, but when he's kind of in between that,
right? And a lot of actors, weird. You're right. And the actor McKellen, he's a British actor, of course. And a lot of Brit actors, they're the type of "what's my motivation" actors. Even though he's played Palpatine before in Return of the Jedi before this, and it's not necessarily a bad performance. It's, you know, like I said before, it's uninspired, and like you said, he seems kind of we're talking about Ian McKellen as he seems kind of, I guess, lost.
Yeah.
And let's bounce back to Hayden Christensen as Anakin, and I think the thing with his performance is he's supposed to be whiny and bratty, but hear me out. I think he's supposed to be whiny and bratty, but his performance is so uninspired with the lack of direction, it comes off as just that, probably what we consider bad acting. Because, yeah. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, because this is the first time I've seen this cat. And and after that, anytime I heard his name, I was like, oh God, not him.
Yeah.
But he's a bad actor.
And the thing is, with that is so unfair.
I agree.
Because Hayden Christensen, he was in a movie called Shattered Glass. It came out a year later after Attack of the Clones. And I think it's his best performance in the film. And he was in another movie, it's called Life is a House. And it was a rather good movie, and he gives a decent performance. And Life as a House came out a year before Attack of the Clones in 2001. But he's in Star Wars. He's the kid that George Lucas picked to play Anakin Skywalker. So that's the only thing people are going to pay attention to.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and he was in another movie. It's just so many other movies but Hayden Christensen is just known. And, you know, that's why he admitted he went away for a while. You know, after the Star Wars movies. And even so, let's go back to the Phantom Menace for a second. Jake Lloyd, the child actor, he said it ruined his life.
Yeah. But he was in... Was Jingle All the Way before or after?
It was before. A couple of years before.
Okay, so he was in that. And then after that, I have no clue.
Yeah, it's nothing. It's basically nothing.
And you know what? Some of it, well, a lot of it, I would think, are, you know, the criticism.
Yeah.
And if that was made today with the internet we have now, that poor kid would be probably on the street like the guy from Mighty Ducks. But
yeah. But you know, and I'm a segue into no, but go ahead. You were about to say something.
No.
But no, you're right, and that brings me to kind of a. It's not all the way sad, because it would end up. It's gonna end up having a happy ending, and we're gonna. Another twofer. So, Ahmad Best was the voice actor and motion caption actor for Jar Jar Binks. Yeah. So, now let's go into the Jar Jar Binks character. And we mentioned earlier that this is the movie that would bring that big cloud of hate over Jar Jar. And you can step in and correct me on this one. No, go ahead.
Which is funny, because it's just a scene. Like,
yeah,
you let one scene define a whole character.
And that's crazy. And I'm glad we're on the same page with that. So the scene in the movie Attack of the Clones is Jar Jar is he votes emergency power to Palpatine.
But he gets manipulated into because what is it? They're in there with Jimmy Smits and Palpatine and the blue guy, and they're talking about it. This is why we need, you know, the army now. And Jimmy Smits is like, well, no, the debate's not over. And then the blue guy turns to the emperor and says, if only Queen Amidala were here.
Yeah.
You know, so they're manipulating him. And he's weak-minded anyway, so it wasn't gonna take much to do, but to get him to vote for that. And it's kind of funny that think everybody hated that him for that, and it's but it was probably gonna happen anyway.
Right. So what happens in the scene is he ultimately gives Palpatine, he becomes Supreme Chancellor, he gives him unlimited power, and basically this is leading up to what ultimately is gonna turn him into the Emperor Palpatine. You know, because he has this unlimited power and he uses it in his advantage, and everybody, like you said, this is one scene like, oh, Jar Jar, he basically birthed the Empire.
Yeah.
And then unfortunately, and this is before you know, the internet is becoming more and more prevalent.
Oh yeah.
And the hate that came down on Ahmaat Best was so unfair. And Ahmaat Best, the actor, the Jar Jar Binks actor, he became at one point, don't want to bring an episode down, but he became suicidal.
Which is crazy because it was just, he was just playing a character. It wasn't him. It was just his character, because you really don't see him. It's all CG'd over his face. And for people to attack him personally and criticize that character, something he put a lot into, is crazy, because, you know, it's just, it was going to happen anyway.
Yeah.
You know, the Emperor is going to get his powers no matter what, whether Lucas chose to do that character or somebody else.
Yeah, that's very sad that had to happen to like Jake Lloyd and Ahmaat Best. Basically, their careers would be ruined because of these criticisms.
Yeah, in movies that, from fans that are supposed to like the movie.
Yeah, and that's the crazy thing. But you know, moving, and speaking of which, we were talking about the scene. And in my opinion, and I definitely want to hear yours, this is where the Attack of the Clones get brought down. So after we mentioned the aforementioned speeder chase scene, right? There's far and few. Now, Star Wars, the series, is considered space operas, adventure movies. But George Lucas, we were speaking on... he didn't have a handle, like, and we speak Empire Strikes Back was directed by a different director, Irvin Kershner. Return of the Jedi was directed by Richard Marquand, and these were directors who had a vision, who ultimately brought Lucas's vision to life, but they had their own vision, and they would step in and say, no, I don't think so. But George Lucas, it was criticized he didn't have that on this movie, and it kind of shows, especially in Attack of the Clones, with the political stuff, because the movie comes to a dead halt with the scenes like that, the discussions and the table meetings, and then we have just a tad, and it becomes almost boring.
Yes.
And then, you know, we have the subplot with Obi-Wan Kenobi investigating the assassin origin. That was interesting, and that led to an action scene with he and Jango Fett. And then, other than that, it leads back to the aforementioned boring lack of chemistry Amidala and Anakin scenes.
Okay. And... Well, think about it. Okay.
Go.
It's interesting you talk about that there's two plot lines, right?
Mm-hmm.
One that's exciting and one that everybody has a problem with. Where have you heard that before? I've heard that before.
Sure enough.
Which movie?
Yeah. Definitely the sequel. Me, that Last Jedi. Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody talks about the same thing with Finn's.
The Canto bite with Rose. See,
everybody's like, it was unnecessary, and what was it for, and blah blah blah. I think, you know, it's the same thing with the love story in episode two. It didn't fit. It was there. Now the difference is that this didn't do any character development on episode on Attack of the Clones.
Yeah,
you know, it had no purpose besides trying to get you that they're falling in love. Well, we kind of already figured that was kind of already figured out. Mm-hmm. But that's another thing. That's a different topic we could discuss later about all the episodes. But as far as The Last Jedi and Finn, it's kind of a character development scene for him.
Yeah.
And I didn't really have a problem with it as much in The Last Jedi as a lot of other people did.
Yeah.
You know,
and I think it was like you said, one storyline is very interesting and the other one not so much. It's the balance thing that throws it off.
Right. And you're slowing these down because you're cutting in between. So you're getting excited and then you kind of pulled back, and then you're getting excited and getting pulled back. If they both were kind of balanced a little better, in both movies, it probably wouldn't be as bad.
Yeah, true enough. But yeah,
it's his directing and his act and how he's directing the actors. It's droll.
Yeah, but no, that's a very yeah. Yes, and that's a good point. One seems just like the other, but yeah, no, it's no but at all. It actually is that really brings Attack of the Clones down, I think, even more so maybe than The Last Jedi, or it sticks out more because of we seem to be dwelling on the negatives, a couple of positives. I don't think Christopher Lee, who plays I forget the character's name. Look at me.
Oh, Count Dooku.
Count Dooku. Yeah, Christopher Lee, who plays Count Dooku, Christopher Lee, the actor, has such a presence. I don't think it's possible for him to turn in a bad performance. I mean, in Gremlins 2, he's like the Shakespearean actor who's in this goofy movie. And I really like Christopher Lee's Count Dooku, who's introduced in this movie. And
And to touch on that, and I've said this plenty of times about plenty of bad movie directing, is that there are actors out there that it doesn't matter who's directing them.
Yeah, they're gonna take charge.
Exactly. Yeah. They're going to put out 100%, and their performance is going to stand out above the rest. And then, like Alec Guinness, he was a classically trained actor,
right?
Very famous. He's in this independent movie, Star Wars,
mm-hmm.
You know, the first independent movie, where some of the acting's good, some of the acting isn't, but he was flawless.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a sign, to me, that's a sign of a good actor.
Yeah. And for you people, I didn't mean to cut you off, John, and you, for you people that forget, in the first Star Wars movie, Alec Guinness was nominated for Best Supporting Actor, an Academy Award. People forget that.
Yeah, one of the few any Star Wars got.
Right, one of the actually the only acting nomination any Star Wars movie got.
Oh, just as far as acting, I was talking about awards.
Yeah. Period, oh yeah, no, just acting, because all the Star Wars movies get the technical awards, like hands
down.
True.
That's true.
But another positive before we come off of this, in my opinion, is while this movie, I think what George Lucas was doing, I'm talking about the lightsaber fight at the end. I think he was going for more so drama than a showy fight scene. Because when Anakin is fighting Count Dooku, there's a lot of close-ups with the lightsabers crossing the face. I think he was going for a dramatic effect. But then there's the Yoda fight scene with Count Dooku. And I think that's one of the better moments in the movie. What say you?
There was a problem with that fight scene I had, and this kind of goes to the internet thing again. Mm-hmm. After episode one, I found a fan site, and I constantly went to it. I mean, I was on there probably a couple times a week, just hungry for any little bit of leaked information or rumor or whatever, and blah blah blah.
Right.
So knowing that Anakin was supposed to lose an arm.
Yep.
And it didn't happen in the factory. Like he kinda
Yeah, they teased it.
Right. They teased it in the factory scene before that. It kinda now looking back on it, you see he's supposed to be a better swordsman than that. And he just holds up his arm and leaves it there, and Count Dooku just cuts it off. And it's like that that's also a little bit a part of the one topic I want to mention after we discuss all three.
Yeah, no, definitely.
But you know, it is just kinda like, yeah, if you knew it was coming, you knew it was coming. So he was trying to get that, build that anticipation of when is it gonna happen, what's gonna happen. You know Anakin's not gonna kill Count Dooku. You kind of know that watching that scene. I kind of knew it the first time I saw it in the theater. It was like, I don't think this is gonna go out right.
Yeah,
you know, and it didn't. But even so much so that to get rid of Obi-Wan in that scene, he kind of let Obi-Wan go down like a little punk.
Yeah, he took him out rather fast, didn't he?
And it was like, okay, it's you know, writing yourself in a corner, maybe. I don't know. But the Yoda, and then you transition to the Yoda scene, and everybody's gets to see Yoda for the first and only time handling, well, not only time. Yeah. At that point.
Yeah, but the first time ever fighting.
The first time of seeing Yoda jump around like a crazy dude, because he's always been slow. That's how you know him.
Yeah.
And fighting Count Dooku. But even then, it was, you got this all powerful Jedi, can't beat Count Dooku.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of, it
but
was
to
a
be
good
fair
scene, but
Count Dooku sort of, well, he's a bad guy, he diverted his attention so he could get away.
Yes.
Yeah, with the
I know. It just is. All Count Dooku is also not the only bad guy who can shoot lightning from his fingertips.
True.
I don't know. It just, the thing about this, the whole movie in general, is,
well, you know what, John, let me cut you off. I want you to hold that thought, and we're gonna go into another segment. We're gonna finish up the Attack of the Clones here. And yeah, definitely hold on to that thought. And folks, we will be right back. Having a time is just going by. He's having a great conversation about these movies.
Always.
But we will be back in a sec. Hey y'all, and we are back. And we were discussing Attack of the Clones, and a very interesting discussion. And John had a thought. Now, you could go ahead and continue.
Okay, so going into the movie, coming out of episode one, coming out all the hype, you know, you go in, at least I did, I went to episode two just like expecting it to be another good one. And by the end of it, once the credits rolled, music's up, everything, I felt very cheated and kind of disappointed. You know, because it was like, okay, what's going on here? you know, I love the first one. This one I'm walking out of, and it's not. It was good. There were some good scenes, but there's more to criticize about it than the other one. You know, in my opinion, I have a lot more to say. You know, about how there's certain things here and there, but it felt maybe incomplete. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's just it was just not great. And you know, I saw episode one like 3-4 times in the theater.
Same here.
I probably saw episode two twice.
Mm.
So that's not a. It wasn't a good. And I don't even remember why I saw it twice. I probably wouldn't have if there wasn't a reason. You know, it needed some, like you said, it needed somebody to get in there and to kind of guide Lucas into something in a different path.
Yeah. And kinda it's like, you know, some people, I'm sorry to cut you off, but big creative genius minds, usually they'll have somebody behind them to tell them, you know, the saying, you know, you throw everything in, including the kitchen sink, you know, and like, okay, just throw the kitchen sink, but leave the faucets off, you know.
Yeah.
Don't throw everything.
And there's sort of a difference here. It's he's not just creating a story; he's creating a world.
Yeah.
There's a lot of elements to create a world, so you can't do it all by yourself. Mm-hmm. Not in that fashion. And he probably should have let somebody else direct it, and it probably would have turned out way different.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the thing. You mentioned Star Wars, or the original. Well, actually, the original trilogy and the prequel trilogy. By technical standards, believe it or not, the prequel trilogies are independent movies also. And they were independently funded from a studio system. They was only distributed by 20th Century Fox, but
right,
all of the funds were raised independently. And going back to the original trilogy, that was one of the reasons George Lucas didn't direct the second and third movie, that being Empire and Jedi, because you know, Lucas took out bank loans for Empire Strikes Back, and 20th Century Fox offered to foot the budget, but they would have had more control.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know, that's just how that works. But thank goodness Lucas.
He said he didn't have time to direct those. Because you know, ILM was starting up, and the story and all that other, like the companies. He was running companies instead of making movies at that point.
Exactly. And Industrial Lights and Magic, that was a visual effects company. Skywalker Sound, that was his post-production sound company. And without veering off too much, but he also would have something to do with the creation of Pixar, but that's another.
Very little, but yeah.
Yeah, very little, but he is a little bit. But yeah. Also, back to Attack of the Clones, I think everybody would agree this is the weakest movie of the prequel trilogy, and probably, we could get back and forth to this, probably one of the weaker Star Wars movies of all the series.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. At that point, which is funny because I really, four movies in, the original three and episode one, I really never had disliked any of them.
Yeah.
Like, you could watch them all and over and over and over and enjoy them just the same. And then episode two comes out, and it was the first one that it was like, you know, like I can do without seeing it multiple times. And I have throughout the years, you know, as a matter of fact, the other day when I rewatched it, it was the first time I actually sat down and watched the whole thing.
Yeah. A very long time.
In a very long time. Because, you know, they'll show it on TV. Yeah, they'll show a bunch on TV. They don't really show episode two.
That's true, yeah.
All that much on TV. But even then, it was like, yeah, I can do without.
Yeah. And And let me go back to the, you said something, and I think this is a universally shared feeling, even for the people that like it more than the people that don't. So we got A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, Phantom Menace, and now we have the Star Wars movie and Attack of the Clones that we have this feeling that we're not used to having with a Star Wars movie.
Exactly.
And it's hard to, it, back then, and maybe still a little bit now, it was hard to describe because Star Wars was such a sacred thing and there's no way it could be bad.
Right.
And unfortunately, Attack of the Clones was that. And but now let's segue into the redemption. Now, something happens that usually doesn't happen with sequels, especially a sequel of a sequel. And with episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, George Lucas actually improves, you know, from the predecessor. I think, in my opinion, I think Revenge of the Sith is maybe the best movie in the prequel trilogy. And that's my opinion.
Right.
And I think overall, a lot of things improve. I think the acting improves. I think he scales back on, there's obviously heavy effects. It's a freaking Star Wars movie. But
well,
I think,
by then everything was green, blue screened, yeah. I should say. He used a lot of blue, or ILM did. Not so much green. I think it just mattered on what the scene called for. But by then, yeah. By part three, I don't think there was very much physical effect. Whereas in episode one, maybe you could probably say maybe 50-50.
Yeah.
You know, and then episode two, probably 30-70. Maybe that's a little high.
Yeah.
But in this one, I'm pretty sure from the behind the scenes that I've seen, it almost seems like there's no physical effects whatsoever. Yeah.
But also what helps with that is, so this is 2005, and also this episode should be coinciding with the 15th anniversary of Revenge of the Sith.
Really?
And, yeah. Yep, 2005. And, and so technology moves, so you know that technology moves very fast. And so 3 years later, and the movie looks better. So you have Attack of the Clones being the very first movie shot entirely on a digital format. And this movie, while digitally shot, the technology was tweaked a bit to look more, for lack of a better term, filmish. It doesn't look so pristine. It looks right. Like it could have been shot on film, because Attack of the Clones, if you watch it, it's very, very, very pristine. It's a weird thing to describe, but compare it to Revenge of the Sith. Revenge of the Sith has a more classic look to it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, but do you think that's because it was a little darker?
You mean as far as tone or just visually?
Visually.
Yeah, and you know what? Yeah, and I think that actually that's actually a good point, because Lucas actually switched cinematographers.
Oh, okay.
So the overall look of the movie, and yeah, that's a good observation, and I was gonna bring that up, but yeah, it's. But no, I think, like I was saying, I think Revenge of the Sith is the overall best movie of the prequel trilogy, and George Lucas, I think as he was making the prequel movies, he was re-educating himself as a filmmaker.
Probably.
And I think that's why, I mean, just from doing.
It's probably because some of the criticism also.
Yeah.
From part two. He probably changed it up because he did a lot of stuff and he probably listened to him, because yes, the acting was a little bit better. Mm-hmm. Still not great on the romance.
No.
You know, it still was lacking. But even that, you know, Natalie Portman actually acted a lot less drier than she did in Attack of the Clones.
Yeah.
And Hayden Christensen, I think he was a little bit of a bump, but I still see a little bit of that weirdness that from the second one. And that could just be how he's being told to act.
Yeah.
As Anakin. And we see Ewan acting a little bit more goofier. Actually, yeah, a lot of characters acted more goofier in that movie.
Yeah, you can see playing a little loose with the jokes, loose.
Yeah.
Now, it's one thing I want to say. One area. I don't know what this is. I think the scene could have been written and directed by a totally different person than Lucas, but I don't know if he was in the zone that day. So we know, we've discussed, Lucas isn't the best with dialogue, right? And he's not necessarily best directing people, right?
Right.
But I don't know if it was a full moon that day, but there's a scene in the movie where I think he hits it out the park with both. And I'm talking about the scene between Palpatine and Anakin and the discussion of Darth Plagueis the Wise.
Okay.
Now, go back to that scene. If you can remember it in your head, the way it's shot, it's at a space opera, right?
Yeah.
The way the scene
is. All that.
Yeah.
Could be a circus. Who knows?
Right. It looked like they were looking.
Big giant floating water bubbles, ball, people floating in it, you know, who knows what it was, but yeah, it was some kind of form.
So the way the scene was shot, the dialogue, and I think this is probably Hayden Christensen's best acted scene in the two movies that he's in, and Ian McDiarmid is Ian McDiarmid, and the way the scene is edited, the way the scene is acted and directed, the choice of shots and angles, I think this is the best acting scene in the movie. Now, for all of you, go back and watch the scene. You'll see what I'm saying, the jarring difference it is from any other scene where two people are interacting.
It's like it don't fit.
Yeah, it's crazy. And yeah. But for the most part, you see what I'm saying, all right?
It's a scene that makes you pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're invested in it, wanting to know, because you can kind of see, like we talked about before, you know, in Attack of the Clones, Palpatine was kind of lost, but in this one, he has a set goal.
Yeah.
He wants to get Anakin, so he's more not manipulative, but he's very persuasive. Mm-hmm. Very, you know, he's trying to convince him of what his reality is, and I think that helped with the character, and it definitely shows in that scene. The way he grins,
yeah, you can see little nuances, you know, in his acting.
Yeah, because Christensen's, he's looking forward as he's talking. Mm-hmm. You know, Anakin's looking forward at the what's going on, and you know he's grinning as he turns because he knows what he's saying when he says, you know, he even figured out a way to prevent death or fake death. I can't remember how he put it, but he's grin, like the grin that he gives, completely. Yeah, you know, that it was really, it doesn't fit, but it, because it, everything else Lucas does, mm-hmm. like you said, it's just very different, but it's very meaningful. It's probably one of the most memorable scenes out of that movie.
Mm-hmm. And we're gonna get into we brought up tone. You were talking about visually, but going into, now if I'm not mistaken, this thought just came into my head, I think out of the prequel trilogies, this Revenge of the Sith is the one that has the most lightsaber duels. And we have the one with Count Dooku at the beginning, which is a very cool fight scene.
Yeah.
Then we have Samuel Jackson, Mace Windu, the fight scene between he and Palpatine, well, he and his backup, which gets taken out very quickly, in my opinion. Yep. And then we have the lightsaber fight between Anakin and Obi-Wan. And I'm backing up a bit.
You forgot one.
There was one more. The General Grievous.
Yeah, there you go.
And Obi-Wan, which is rather cool, with the General Grievous and his four hands and the lightsabers. So with that, I'm gonna pause right there. There's one more scene that has something to do with a lightsaber. And I think this is one of the scenes that got the PG-13 rating, the first PG-13 Star Wars movie in the series. And so this is when Anakin is turning to the dark side, right? And he goes into the room and the children see that it's Anakin, thinking, you know, he's there to help. And one of the children, what are we going to do? Was too many of them. And what I like about this scene is, I don't like that he kills them, but what I like about this scene is how, once again, it seems like George Lucas' directing style has gotten better over the time. Anakin activates the lightsaber, and the sound that it makes, it sounds more evil, if that makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When he activates it, it's like, it's not the traditional lightsaber activation. It's like a deep dong. I can't make the sound, but, you know, a little creative, this choices like that is when you're starting to, you can see George Lucas is starting to come into his directing a bit.
Right.
And he gets the tone of it right. But swinging back to the lightsabers, I asked this, is the Duel of the Fate lightsaber fight the best in the prequel series?
To me.
Is it better? Is it better than the Anakin and Obi-Wan fight?
Yeah, I think, because I don't know, it just, the Duel of Fates fight hit so much to me. Mm-hmm. It's much more meaningful. That fight with Anakin and Obi kind of sums up kind of what I've been thinking about in this whole, all three trilogies, is that you know something's coming. Mm-hmm. You know something has to happen, but when?
Yeah.
And
anticipation of it.
Anticipation. Yeah. You knew, okay, Obi-Wan's got to win at some point. When is it going to happen? Whereas the Duel of Fates, you didn't know what was going to happen. You didn't know who was going to come. Well, you knew Obi-Wan was going to survive.
Yeah, but you didn't necessarily know Qui-Gon Jinn.
Right, was going to get stabbed in the stomach.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't know that. And then when it happened, it was like, oh, wow, you know, he's gone. You know, he killed him.
Mm-hmm.
And the choreography in all three movies is great. Mm-hmm. Any fight scene, I can't remember his full name, but I know the stunt guy's name's Nick something.
Nick Gallard, I think.
Nick Gallard. Gillard. Yeah, something like that. You know, he did an awesome job. So, was it an awesome fight? Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Do I like it more than Duel of Fates? Probably not.
And you know what? I have to agree with you. It seems, like you said, the stakes. Exactly. Comparing it, because we, although the stakes are big in Revenge of the Sith, but we know something is going to happen, like you said. And that kind of dials it down a bit, because the suspense, although a great fight, is not where it should be.
Correct.
Because we know what has to happen to Anakin.
You're more focused on, is this when it's going to happen?
Right.
Is this when it's going to happen? You're not watching it to watch it. You're watching it to anticipate when it's going to happen.
And then what was born was one of the more famous Star Wars memes ever. I have the high ground.
Yeah, everybody uses that.
Yeah. That's a great way to put it. That Duel of the Fates is definitely one of the best lightsaber fight scenes ever.
Yeah, I mean, to me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's a choice. When you go to make a prequel from a well-established anything,
mm-hmm.
I see this a lot, the writer, director, whatever, tend to put themselves in a corner, because everybody knows what's supposed to happen.
Yeah.
You don't know how, you kind of know how it's gonna happen, but you don't know, you know, you know, okay, yeah. He's got to be Anakin, so he's got to be Darth Vader, so by the end of this movie he's Darth Vader, that they're not gonna leave it any other way. That kind of makes it, some of the choices, like we said, like in the second one, you knew Anakin had to lose an arm. Mm-hmm. So how do you get Anakin to lose an arm? Well, George Lucas chose to handicap the fight and take out Obi-Wan real quick, and he did it again in the third one, and I'm like, I thought, you know, you, Obi-Wan's so much better than that. He fought so many people, Grievous and all this, but he gets in a fight with Dooku and Anakin, and he gets taken out real quick.
Yeah, you got it.
But you have to make, you know, George has to make that choice, and I think when you write yourself in a corner like that, when you make the wrong choice, it doesn't work.
Yeah, it's not true enough. Yeah, and he that's funny. This is a good observation. You notice that he's done that several times in the prequel series, the prequel trilogy.
You know, and that's my only complaint with all three.
Yeah,
is that you know, he wrote them. He didn't necessarily, he wrote himself in a corner by choosing the prequels, and he didn't really do a great job of writing himself out of it.
Yeah, and it's Oh, and I forgot. We both forgot. Speaking of the lightsaber, another fight. Yoda and Palpatine.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So definitely, this is the most lightsaber fights in one Star Wars movie. So that's like five, I think, four or five. But no, you're absolutely right. But yeah, this brings. We discussed the, like you said, we know Anakin. This has to happen, and he gets his legs and his other arm sliced off. But this also brings us to, I think, another one of the film's best scenes, the birth of Darth Vader. And I think it's a very well done scene. It's actually, it cuts back and forth between the birth of Luke and Leia and the death of Amidala. Yeah. And we have the birth of Darth Vader. But there's one thing that kind of weakens the scene for me with Darth Vader.
What, the very last line?
Yeah, and you know what? They actually, from the theatrical version to the home video versions, they actually shortened it a bit. It was even longer in the theatrical version, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah, it lasts a tad bit longer.
Is that not, like, on the DVDs too? Like, all the recent
They changed it.
Blu-rays and everything?
Yeah.
Oh. I kind of thought that, but it's still, that whole...
Yeah, it's still kind of...
And then they repurpose it later on in the super, super special edition.
Yeah, that's a whole nother podcast about the tweaks we mentioned.
Oh, yeah. God.
But no, so as a trilogy, as a whole, where do you place it out of the three, out of the series and out of the three trilogies between the originals, the sequels, and the prequels? Where do you place the prequels?
Like I said in the very beginning, I like it. I think that I hold them higher than the originals. Not by much, but I definitely can rewatch all three of those and, well, two and a half, let's call it.
Yeah.
Two and a half of them.
And let me, I want you to say something. I didn't mean to cut you off, but you could probably answer with this question, and you actually brought this up off mic. So these movies came out when we were old enough to appreciate it, to remember it, to see it in theaters. We were not born when the first two Star Wars movies came out.
Right.
And we were too young to remember the third Return of the Jedi.
Well,
and I think that's another reason. Yeah. And that's why you mentioned we saw the special editions, but why we appreciated that so much. We were able to see them in theaters, and that was a big deal.
Yes.
But
I think, like you said, I've said it before. It's Star Wars for our generation. It's, to me, you know, our older friends and relatives and parents had the original that came out, you know. The first one came out around the same age that it was when episode one came out for me, for my dad.
Right.
You know, and it got him hooked onto it. And we grew up with it knowing that it was there, and we liked it because it was popular, especially as a little kid. But then once you become the teenager, young adult, it just hit at the right time to where I think that these are my Star Wars. I like the originals. Trust me, we could get a whole nother conversation with the other ones.
Oh yeah.
But these are mine. Like, these were made for me, as well as the sequels. They're not really, I mean, they're made for Star Wars fans, but they're really made for a younger generation.
Yeah.
And rightfully so. You know, it kind of has its following. So I do like these better than the original. Not by much, but I do. Especially the first one, episode one.
There we go. So so out of the three prequel movies, Phantom Menace is your favorite?
Yes.
There we go. And that's not, can't argue that. And for all of the criticism, the unfair criticism that movie gets, in my opinion, I'm going to have to go with Revenge of the Sith. But no, we had a really good discussion on these movies, and we will definitely come back. And yeah, the time definitely flies past. The youngest movie of the prequels is about to be 15 years old, and like I said, by the time this episode released, it'll be 15. May 25th, 2005 is when it came out, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, towards the end of May.
Yeah, but
they used to come out, you know.
Yeah, for all of you youngins, all of the Star Wars movies came out in May. The original trilogy and the prequel trilogy, and then they jacked that up with the sequel trilogy. But that's another story.
Oh, yeah. Another
but,
there.
But yeah, definitely, I want to thank John for coming on the podcast, and I would ask him to give us some social media, but John is off the grid. He's one of the rare people that has no social media, and that's real rare. Nowadays, people live and die by social media. But no, John will definitely be back. We have plenty of discussions to discuss, but wanted to get this out of the way.
Not just Star Wars.
Oh no, we'll definitely be back with something more interesting. But oh yeah, for my regular listeners, John is actually the brother of Ryan, who was on my Halloween Michael Myers episode. So that's a little trivia if you all want to go back. And that's one of my more popular episodes. But
yeah, we all have our specialities, man.
Definitely. But now I want to thank John again for joining, and he definitely will become a regular on the show. And check me out at my Instagram at Sigmund Cinema. If you have any questions, any podcast ideas, or requests to be on the show, just let me know and we'll see what we'll see. So I guess it's goodbye for now, and be excellent to each other, and until next time, I'll talk to everybody later.